Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of the Redheads Book Club March edition. Back with the girls, Becky's Choice Month. So excited to be here with everyone. Hey, girlies. Hiya, Dern.
Hey.
Hi.
Dern good.
Hi. Hi, Margo. Hi, Margo's so happy to see us today. She was more excited than she's ever been because Bruno's sitting on my lap.
Oh my God. And when I entered the chat, I saw a face of Bruno that I just like wasn't, like my heart wasn't expecting.
He's too much.
It just brought me such joy.
I've never seen you smile so big.
I know. She's never been so excited to see the redheads.
Literally. If only you would react that way if my dog were on camera, but that's a conversation.
If only you would react that way when you saw us, the redheads.
No, yeah.
Never gonna happen.
Damn.
Never gonna happen.
Damn, Snitch. That's cold. Ice cold. Frozen cold.
Frozen river.
Hey.
So, yes, this month we read The Frozen River by Ariel Lawhin, a Becky's Choice. We're going to get into it pretty swiftly. I will catch up with my girls. But what's interesting about this month's book is that it's our first book by an author for the second time. If you don't know, Ariel Lawhin also wrote Codename Helene, which was one of our favorites here at the Redheads. We read it in 2020. I would highly recommend going and reading it because it stands the test of time.
I mean, it was okay.
Really?
I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was like, is that what we think? I feel like it ages really nicely. I think back fondly on that book.
I think back semi-fondly. I don't remember it. I don't remember loving it, but honestly, I'm curious what I rated it.
Oh, you know what? I can pull that up right here. Our Redheads ranking for Codename Helene was a 3.975, which is solid.
That feels right.
That's the one where she was jumping out of planes.
Yes, it was World War II, Nancy Wake, Nancy.
Yes.
It's actually funny to think about the fact that the same author wrote that book and this book because it didn't feel the same at all. Like, it was very,
not
very different.
Close.
Yeah, and the writing was very different. It felt like two different authors, which I think is the mark of a good author that she can, you know, wear so many hats. So I'm just going to quickly catch up with my girls. Bex, it's your big month. How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm great. The weather is turning in New York, so this is when I start to come out of my winter shell and I become like a spring flower. It's crisp Sancerre season, which I was just telling you, Jax, is really the most appropriate time for you to make a visit. So I'm ready where you are.
I will. Plus, you have a birthday coming up. You know, Rebecca's born on the day before spring starts.
No, I'm born on the day that spring starts, actually.
What I learned is that the seasons start on the 21st of the month, and Rebecca says it's the 20th.
No, this is a hotly contested debate, but if you're familiar with the vernal equinox, and I'm intimately familiar with it, you would know that the first day of spring is March 20th. It changes like once every 40 years, like something about the moons, but for the moment, it's March 20th.
Well, it's very apt that you would be born on the day before spring starts.
I never thought about that in the context of horoscopes. Like, horoscopes start usually on the 20th of each month.
Well, that's why I'm, like, such a cuspy. Like, I'm a Pisces by the skin of my teeth. And that's why Dana likes me. That's a story for another time. But she loves Pisces.
What would you be if you were born the next day?
Aries.
You'd be an Aquarius if you were born earlier, but then you got stuck into the Pisces.
No. I would be Pisces is like the whole month of March. I'm the last day of Pisces.
Oh, right. You're right.
And if she were an Aries?
And if I were Aries, what would my energy be?
Josh is an Aries.
So we would get married.
True. Well, Dana, how are you?
Guys, today is not my day. It started at 10 in the morning when I woke up feeling unusually rested and saw that my alarm had been going off for 2 hours.
What?
Never happened to me before. It was like a silent alarm. It wasn't making noise, but it said snooze. Has anyone had that experience with Apple? Oh my God.
Maybe you snoozed it in your sleep.
Wait, no, because today I was sleeping. And I realized I was just sleeping, like, it felt like I was sleeping for too long. I was like, my alarm has to be going off soon. So I look at the clock, and it's 8:30. My alarm was set for 7:45. It did not go off.
Snitch. wow, I feel seen. I woke up so disoriented. I had work calls, work texts, like, you good, you alive? And then, as this team can attest to, I had serious technological issues getting onto this Zoom. I'm currently sitting next to Ran in her apartment. Ran here because it's just not my day, technology-wise.
You sound frazzled.
I'm frazzled. I don't know if Mercury's in retrograde, but, like, this is it on steroids.
Okay, well, everything's all well. We're together, so do not fret. I also feel like maybe your guys' alarms, like, was a plot to sabotage the redheads. They knew we were recording today. They set you guys off, like, delayed on your day, and I just feel like it's Reese's book club coming for our necks.
100%.
100%. It's the book talk. It's the fact that we're missing from book talk. They are trying to even further push us out.
Yeah, but we can't be stopped.
Nothing.
Snitch, how are you, my dear little sister?
Little sister?
My teeny tiny sister.
Teeny tiny. I'm good. I am going on vacation on Thursday, so I guess when this uploads. I'm going to Anguilla, and I'm so excited.
How dare you?
Who are you going with? Not me.
Not you. With Emily and two of her friends. And I'm so excited. I haven't been on vacation in so long, and I just want to park my ass.
Weren't you just in Mexico at Misca Musca Hotel?
That was literally in November.
You were just in Park City for truly 6 weeks.
That was literally in December.
Okay, I just want to say, and also, like, we're talking about, like, vacation, beach vacation, but, like, okay, maybe we just have, like, different ideas of how long it's been since a vacation, because going to Hotel Misker Musker in November, like, is yesterday.
Wait, you're so wrong. Like, that was ancient.
It's not even 6 months. How often do you expect to go on vacation?
Once every two.
Once every two.
Okay. Once every two.
For me, it's like once every 2 years.
But yeah, no. Like,
Jax, you have an unusually long threshold.
Yeah. Most people, I feel like, are on vacation like every other weekend.
I guess. What's the word for you guys?
Weekend warriors.
Weekend warriors can go on vacation.
I think the word you're looking for is Gen Z.
No. Weekend warrior, young professional, ink, not dink.
Ink.
Ink.
Could
income,
be dink
no
soon
kids.
If we know what's good.
Snitch with the dink.
Hey.
I'm lost in this conversation.
Do you know what dink is?
Dual income, no kids.
So you're ink.
I'm sink.
Single income, no kids. Okay, fine.
That's
I'm
cute.
A sink.
But you're a sink, like, and you could be a dink if you know
no,
what
but I
mean.
Am. But I would say I'm a dink. I do have dual income.
You do. Actually, you're a trink. Don't forget about that redhead stipend.
Yes. Yeah. Stipend. My per diem.
Yeah, your redhead's per diem. We're really changing your tax bracket.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm really excited for my vacation because it's long overdue. And
it's literally not.
It's literally not.
And then... What else? Oh, I have an announcement.
Snitch, go off.
I have an exclusive. I'm moving. I haven't told anyone that I'm moving.
When are you moving?
April.
Of course, I know that yes, you're moving, yeah, but yeah, I don't know when.
April 3rd.
April 3rd, okay.
And I'm so excited. I'm moving into, like, a true apartment that feels like a home. And I just can't wait. It's all I can think about. I hate my fucking apartment now that I've decided I'm moving.
It's and time. This is a beautiful next step.
I couldn't agree more. I've truly outgrown my apartment. I've been in my building for so long. I've been in my location for so
change
long.
Change is so good.
Yeah.
I love change.
Yeah. So it's just time to level up. And that's what I'm doing.
Fresh scenery, change of
pace. I might need to ask for a raise in my per diem to afford my rent. But we can talk about that offline.
Maybe you could get the new position of social media manager. We're hiring here at the Redheads.
That's true. I don't have the time.
Yeah, we're hiring a content creator for the Redheads. If you've got what it takes, and I'm looking for someone that's going to level up this bitch. So if this is not a hobby, like, I'm looking for a professional content creator, someone with ideas, creativity, and you can wipe the slate clean of our Instagram. You don't need to follow the order that I had followed. Like, and I want to see ideas. So if you want to reach out to me, theredheadsbookclub@gmail.com. I've gotten a lot of inbound requests. So what I'm going to say is you better set yourself apart. Like, send me some work examples. Tell me what you would do for us. Maybe would you get us on Book Talk? Show me what kind of reel would you be making, book reels. Let me know. We're hiring, and it's a very exciting position. It's an exciting time for the Redheads. We're doing big things this year. 2024, the year of the Redheads.
It's our year.
Now. It's our year, girls. Okay, let's get into the book, shall we? Because we read The Frozen River by Ariel Lawhin, a Becky's Choice historical fiction. It's been a minute. And Becky's going to give us a summary of the book because that's the book chooser's job now.
Oh, sure is. It's the book chooser's job to do a summary.
You can do it. I always do it off the cuff. Just speak from your heart, Bex.
Sure is.
Speak from your heart.
I'm dead.
Okay, here we go.
Buckle up.
Buckle up, readers. The Frozen River is a post-Revolutionary War novel that is loosely based off of a character who really existed in our timeline. Her name is Martha
Ballard.
Ballard, yeah. Thank you. That is going to be my sticking point, is I'm really bad with names. So Martha Ballard is a midwife who was not formally trained until when in her adulthood she kind of got tapped to become this amazing midwife. And she then successfully delivered, I think, thousands of children and never lost a mother. So the book is really centered around Martha and her life. And what was fascinating is we learned a lot about the environment and kind of like the post-war development of their land. They are living in Maine.
Right? Yeah, Maine.
They're living in Maine, and it's winter time, and there is quite a lot of drama in Hallowell, which I'm pretty sure is the name of their town. Fantastic, doing well. So the book also centers around this kind of horrific case of a woman who was raped, and she was raped by two men in town. And the story unfolds about kind of the like judicial system at this time without like a formalized like court in place. So there is kind of like multiple threads taking place at once. This like horrific case, the woman at the front of it, her name is Rebecca Foster. She is the wife of a minister in town who is like concurrently kind of getting squeezed out of his position. And it's really like a kind of a he said, she said, which really plays into larger dynamics of like women and men at this time. And kind of that is something that we see throughout the book of like how women are represented. Martha ends up being quite a prominent, I would say, hero throughout this novel. And we follow her. We follow her family. She has an amazing relationship with her husband. She has many children, and we learn about them as well. And I would say that it's just like incredible historical fiction, like loosely based off a real character. But obviously, like there is some drama. There is a lot of like other like narratives that play up like some of like the drier historical meat. Yeah. How do you think that went, you guys?
Really good. I think that was really good. I think this is the sort of episode where most people will have read the book. If you didn't read the book, like there is a lot there. But what I like about this book is that it is about a real person in history, Martha Ballard. You can Google her. And she was a very successful midwife and seemed like just, you know, good people.
Good people.
So what were your overall thoughts on the book, Bex, as it was your choice?
Well, you guys, I honestly loved it. I wouldn't say I loved it from the moment I picked it up. At first, I was a little concerned that I was reading a more dense, slow book. But then I reoriented myself and I kind of reframed my mindset because the last few books that we've read, Strange Sally Diamond, None of This Is True, they've been very fast-paced. They've been action-packed. They're like zippier reads. And this brought me back to my roots. I love historical fiction. And this was a very perfect way to reintegrate myself into like the genre that I love so much. So I had to just remember that it wasn't going to be like action-packed all the time. I loved the character development. I found myself invested in every storyline. That's not always guaranteed. Sometimes you find yourself fatigued with certain characters and their story. But in this case, I was really committed to every thread. And I just loved reading about this post-Revolutionary War timeline and the winter landscape and the pioneering of a new land. Martha was obviously a total boss. I thought the town drama was wild, and overall, I thought it was excellent. And I also found myself thinking about this book after I finished it, and I feel like that's always a good sign. So, very much enjoyed.
Great. Dana, what did you think?
I am really so confused what I thought about this book, because I actually loved the writing, and there were moments where I was so immersed in the 1700s that I lost track of time. But then there were also moments where I was like, what the hell is happening? I cannot remember anybody's name. How do I still have so much left of this book? But once I stopped kind of like resisting trying to find the main plot, because I was like, wait, is this about the rape and like who the murderer was? Wait, is this about like her family life? Wait, is this about like the judicial system? Wait, is this about like Cyrus finding love? And just accepted that it was kind of about everything all at once and mostly the time period and just how things operated back there. I leaned in a little more and I liked it. Ultimately, I like... think there were too many random threads that took too long to develop and tie back to each other. But I loved Martha. I loved Ephraim. I thought those were the best characters in the book. And overall, I really liked it. I just like at times thought it really dragged and didn't really know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm going to throw to Snitch quickly. I've been dying to know your thoughts.
I really enjoyed the book. However, it was far too long. Like, did not need to be as long as it was. Like, at some point, I no longer cared how the story ended, because that was, like, the book's not ending. But I really liked it. I mean, there's no justice, you know? Like, it was, mm-hmm. and the justice that was served wasn't enough justice for me. Yeah. So, like, that always, like, leaves me, like, not satiated. However, I enjoyed the book, and I liked Martha a lot as, like, the... protagonist. And yeah, why did you think I was gonna hate it?
I did. As I was reading it, I was like, oh my god, is Snitch even gonna finish this book? Like, it was very
I had to put in, I had to work overtime to finish this motherfucker.
Me too. I started it like 5 days before I needed to finish it, and in 4 days I only got to 22%, and then yesterday I sped read. Like, I just spent every waking moment reading it, and I stayed up really late, and I didn't want to skim anything, so I just took the time to read it, which I'm glad that I didn't skim, because there's a lot there. And the book is good. It was good, and overall I wound up enjoying it by the end, but it was just so long in the tooth. Like, the very descriptive descriptions about all the nature and the birds and the fox and the leaves and the trees and the lake, like...
The fucking fox, only because the fox, like, didn't even help her, because the warning didn't help her. She still went. Like, the fox did nothing.
He tried, you guys. He tried.
Also, all of a sudden, I was like, Paul Revere's here? Like, Thomas Paine? Oh. Like, what's going on?
Thomas
Paine. Yeah. I didn't even pick up on Thomas Paine.
Yeah. So the writing style, like, it was just slow, and it felt like... intentionally so slow. Every detail was like she made a meal out of. As far as the storyline, I enjoyed pieces of it. I do feel like I didn't know what the book was going to be, but then it became clear that it was about like the progression of this trial. For me, what I liked most was the midwifery, the labor, births, all of these details about how they gave birth back in the day. I feel like I'm always thinking about that, like what mothers like 300 years ago would do, especially for the one woman who like didn't have any breast milk left. Like, I find that stuff so fascinating. So those details like were what I was here for. And I feel like I learned a lot of interesting factoids. And also it took place in a time and place that I rarely read about, post-Revolutionary War, and really not at all. So I didn't even really know that like it took so long to get our court system up and running. And for a while there were like these three tiers of courts. And it was kind of like mishmash. So I definitely got stuff out of it. I wouldn't say like I loved reading it. I wouldn't say that. It wouldn't be said by me.
Interesting. I thought for sure you'd like love it. I don't know why.
Yeah, this felt so Jax. And I somewhat worry that we didn't give you enough time to read it, because I feel like if you had more time with her.
No, I did. And the thing is, like, if it gripped me, I would have read more in the early days. But, like, I went to read it every night, and then instead I just wound up on my phone. because it wasn't
felt like I was reading
yet.
So much of it, and I just made no progress. Like, I didn't even, like, dislike when I was reading it. I was just like, how am I still at 22%? I was stuck there
for four days.
Oh, my God. I was at 22% for 4 days.
No, you guys. I was at, like, 11 hours left of this book for actually, like, a concerning amount of time. I was like, am I going backwards?
Oh, my God. Yeah, then I just had to, like, you know, really focus on reading and get to a place where I cared more. And then I enjoyed it. So... It was good. Let's get into the DBQs about this book and the time that it is set in. But I have to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Caraway. You guys, we love Caraway at the Redheads. We love Caraway at the Toast. But if you're listening to this episode, please use the Redheads code because we deserve it. So let me tell you about Caraway if you don't know. It is non-toxic cookware. It's good looking. It's clean cooking. We love their pots and pans. They're also aesthetic, so you can choose these really gorgeous colors to match with your kitchen aesthetic. I have the cream set, and I also recently got the pink set, which makes cooking so much more fun. But also, recently, Caraway saw that I weirdly use the grossest cutting boards. I never even realized that my cutting boards are so old, and there's, like, plastic particles falling off. And Caraway went ahead and sent me their wood cutting boards, so now I can, like, cut cleanly. They sent me their knife set. They really have everything. They have food storage containers. They have new prepware, kitchenware, everything. You can get your whole kitchen outfitted from Caraway. And now that spring is here, you want to reset. We're spring cleaning. We're cleaning up our act physically and mentally and spiritually. You can ditch the chemicals with Caraway. Their non-toxic cookware features a chemical-free ceramic coating so food can be prepared with peace of mind that no hard-to-pronounce chemicals will leach into your healthy ingredients. Visit carawayhome.com/redheads to take advantage of this limited-time offer for 10% off your next purchase. This deal is exclusive for our listeners, so visit carawayhome.com/redheads or use code redheads at checkout. Caraway, non-toxic cookware, made modern, and as always, redheads is spelled R-E-A-D-H-E-A-D-S. Today's episode is also brought to you by Factor. Eating better is easier with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart Protein Plus and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. They have two-minute meals. There's no prep, no mess. These meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's flexible for your schedule. You can get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. You can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. So if you want delicious, tasty meals at home that you don't have to cook that are going to be healthy and fresh, head to factormeals.com/redheads50 and use code redheads50 to get 50% off. That's code redheads50 at factormeals.com/redheads50 to get 50% off. Thank you to our sponsors. We love you dearly.
Thank you to our sponsors.
First question. How did life in Hallowell in 1789 surprise you? Did the characters act as you expected for this historical period?
Yes, I feel like they were way more functional in the wintertime given the conditions than I anticipated. And they were just get on their horses and go. We're like travel 4 hours at a time and not determining the fact that there was like a blizzard. And I feel like they just made it work. I feel like they also always had a good supply of food, which I'm actually grateful that we didn't hear about, like, food shortages.
Yeah.
You know, totally. What? I thought the same thing. I feel like sometimes when you read stuff from history, there's just this association that there's, like, shortages unless you're reading about, like, royal people because I feel like there was such a gap and there's a lot of scarcity. But I didn't feel that way in this book, and that didn't seem to be something that – plague them, but I guess they're also living in the new world and there's all this opportunity in land, and that's why they came here, was for those things. I'm sure the scarcity and famine like existed where they came from, which is why they left.
Something like I always think about when I read these sort of books is how insane it is they didn't have cell phones. Like the fact that he had to send a bird to let her know to meet at the courthouse to me is so foreign, but made crazier by like we didn't have cell phones in our early lifetime. Like that is such a recent development. And like also back then, everyone was having 7 to 10 kids. and starting when they were like 20 years old. Those are always the two things that stand out to me when reading about those time periods of just how different it is from today.
Yeah, well, I feel like back then, I feel like even when we grew up, we didn't have cell phones, but it was like you made a plan and there was not going to be any change to the plan because you wouldn't be able to like let someone know that. So people kind of just like honored their schedules more and their commitments. And if we like had plans to go to lunch, like we're going to lunch. It's not like, I don't feel like it today because one person's already on their way. So I feel like back then it was more that way too. Like we made plans for in a fortnight and then you bet your ass I'm going to be there. 100%. So I feel like maybe people were even like more reliable back then because they couldn't just like
flake. Flakiness is a later development.
Well, I feel like everyone was having so many kids because they didn't know anything about like contraception. So
and it was, like, these kids all died.
Contraception.
Like there were like so many diseases. Like three of her kids died, so she gave birth 7 times, but she really only had 4 kids.
9.
Oh man, 9.
Yeah. She gave birth 9 times and had 6 kids at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you had to have more.
Did anyone else think at first that we were reading about a Jewish community?
No.
No, Snitch.
Ephraim?
When I saw Ephraim, I was like, oh, is he a Jew? And then his name was Ballard, and then there was nothing more about it.
The whole time, I was like, it's a Jewish community, like, for sure.
Martha?
I don't know. Ephraim. Who? Ephraim? Like, what?
I think it was a popular name in that age.
Whatever.
Then thank you for telling me how it's pronounced.
Yeah. Then they were talking about going to church, like missing church on a Sunday. And I was like, oh, I've missed something here.
I don't think there was one funny Jewish person in the entire book.
No, definitely
Ephraim
not.
Was Jewish.
Ephraim was not Jewish. What was also surprising, and I have to imagine this is pretty historically accurate, was that how many marriages, like how many children were born out of wedlock or before wedlock at that time? She said 4 in 10.
That doesn't surprise me. People can't keep it in their panties.
But also it's like this fertility, my goodness.
They're literally 5 years old. They're literally young. Like 19.
They don't have all these hormone disruptors in their shampoo and their birth control.
Oh God, here she goes.
No, I'm just saying, like, that part makes sense.
Yeah, that's actually fair.
And in their food, you know, they're having farm fresh eggs.
Farm fresh eggs for breakfast.
But what is surprising, I wonder when in history, and it definitely was before this, like now, you know, obviously you get pregnant when you're ovulating. And I'm sure that they figured that out a long time ago. Because that's really the only form of like contraception you could have used, aside from her like tinctures and herbs and stuff.
Right.
Like to know when you're ovulating and to either intentionally have sex or not during that time. I wonder if they were on top of that.
I feel as though they were not, especially not the youngins. I think with Martha, I wasn't really clear on what happened. I wanted to bring this up with, what was his name? Something Crane?
Billy Crane.
Because it sounded like she was assaulted, but it also sounded like something happened, like where I don't think it fully came to fruition. Like I thought like Ephraim came and saved her.
Wait, no, I feel like she was pregnant. Remember, wasn't she pregnant when they got married?
No, she might have been.
They didn't know, and then they held off.
They didn't
until she got, and she got her period. So they knew that she wasn't pregnant, and she was so relieved they had waited because she would have always wondered whose kid it was.
Oh, okay, so then forget me. He did assault her. Got it.
He did assault her, and they hung him, not in the courts. Like, they took him out back and hung him.
Oh, that was what I didn't understand. Because when she was talking about to Jonathan at the end, and she was like, your father, like, wouldn't care. Like, she talked to him about what he's done. In my head, I was like, what did he do? He didn't kill Billy Crane. I guess he did.
Yeah, he did.
He did. I understand.
He took justice into his own hands.
I love when people take justice
he
into
was
their
hanged,
own hands.
And
in
that
books.
Was the, like, have you ever seen a hanging, Martha? And it was like, yeah, from my own assaulter.
Okay, yeah. I understand.
Next question. Throughout the novel, Martha is frequently called to deliver babies from women of all walks of life. Which laboring mother did you feel most connected to?
I was really stressed about the one who was forced live time to defer to either Dr. Page or Martha, because she's like in the throes of duress. And here's this Harvard educated physician who everyone's telling her to rely on, or the obvious choice, Martha. But when you're in that level of pain, I just don't think that's like fair to put on the mother.
Yeah.
But I also wouldn't want it to be on the father. Like, I wouldn't want it to be on the father of the baby to be the one to choose either.
It wasn't him. It was the girl's mother.
No.
Who brought in the new doctor.
Oh, right. Yeah.
She should know better, but she made up for it.
I also...
There were so many names.
I also really connected with Sarah White when she was able to kind of step in and nurse Rebecca Foster's baby. I thought that was a pretty incredible moment.
Me too. I love that for her.
I loved that
And
too.
I also like that one laboring mother who, I don't know, remember her name, but Martha had made mention of, like, she had a really good, like, head. She was in, like, a good headspace. She was, like, being funny and, like, very rational, not, like, screaming and being so hysterical. And I actually thought it was going to end in a place where, like, she taps that girl to become her next apprentice. Mm. And I kept thinking, like, that was going to happen, that she was even, or even Sarah White, like, to train her up. But that was obviously not where the story went.
Was that the same laboring mother, the one she said was just, was, like, standing around, walking around naked with, like, her hair down, and she was, like, saying she was, like, that she wasn't that pretty, but she understands why her husband, like, fell in love with her.
Yeah, that she, that her husband fell in love. She's a smart girl. Her husband chose a partner.
I liked that. Just a wife. I liked her. I liked her.
Me too. Yeah. What did you guys think about all the, like, labor and birth stuff? Were you into it or no?
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more interesting parts of the book, honestly. Like, her attending to all of the women and all the different ways that you could deliver and listen to the midwife. Like, that was where I thought Martha shined the most and was the most powerful.
Yeah, and also, like, how they handled breech deliveries back in the day before there were surgical procedures, how they, like, dealt with tears and the afterbirth, which is, like, the placenta.
Yeah, just say placenta.
Yeah, I loved hearing, maybe they didn't have call it a placenta back in that day.
No, I loved hearing how competent she was, and she didn't need to go to Harvard to be such an amazing healthcare advocate, and I was just so beyond impressed. I've never had a baby, so Jax, you might have felt like a different connection reading it.
No, I really like enjoyed, those were my favorite parts. I find childbirth so fascinating, but I find historical childbirth even more fascinating, like before drugs, and I'm just always thinking about, like, what mothers did back in the day. So this actually was right up my alley in that sense.
You know what was infuriating? How much Dr. Page messed up and, like, never suffered the consequences.
100%. There was no justice in this book.
Yeah, except for the penis chop.
Yeah, but, like, you know what was a crazy birth? Rebecca Foster. I couldn't even, like, when they were explaining, like, the way that she was, like, on her knees, her hands were, like, around Martha's neck, and, like, the doctor had her, like, hands inside. Like, that was a crazy one.
Yeah.
Oh, because it was, like, breech, and then it was upside down, and they had to wait for the contractions to end to, like, fully put their hands inside her and move it. Yeah, that was graphic, Snitch.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Next, a quote from the book. Memory is a wicked thing that warps and twists, but paper and ink receive the truth without emotion, and they read it back without partiality. Martha's diary is a critical component of the novel and a key piece of evidence in Rebecca's trial. Have you ever kept a diary? If not, did reading The Frozen River influence you to start?
Snitch, I think this is directed at you.
Why?
Your voice lock diary.
Password journal.
I do actually agree with that. I feel like sometimes, like, Claudia literally makes up memories. Like, just things that, like, people, like, you think you remember something, and then the more you remember it, like, it, you remember it the way
it changes.
That you wanted it to be, like, not the way that it actually happened. So yeah. I 100% resonate with that.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting is that if Martha Ballard hadn't kept that diary, which wasn't commonplace for women or even midwives at the time, like, this book, Frozen River, wouldn't have been written. Like, her story would largely have faded. And in the author's note, she explained, like, the true circumstances of the story, which is that Martha, like, passed it down to her children, who passed it down to their children, and it ended up becoming part of, like, library, and a biography was written about her. But it's all for that little novel. And of course it helps in the instances where you need to remember things for a trial, or you know, to one-up somebody. But just for your legacy in general, even though it's, like, mundane things, it's part of history.
I gotta say, typographically, I could not read that script. It was so dizzying. It was hard. And also,
it was a bad font.
It was a bad font, and I was hoping for some more juicy diary deets. It was like, weather clear, delivered baby. It was kind of just an annotation of her day, which I get the importance of in terms of like submitting as evidence, but I kind of wanted some more, like, I don't know, details.
No, totally, because also like we would read her day, right? And it'd be like a crazy day. And then it would be the journal entry, and it didn't say anything about what happened during the day. So I'm like, I understand you're trying to record the medical part of it, but you're also trying to record, like, things that have happened. So shouldn't you say, like, the crazy shit that happened?
Yeah, but in the after part, the author mentioned that, like, that genuinely was. Like, there was, like, no drama in her diary. There was no detail. There was no juice. So she was probably trying to be a little bit, like, parallel in that way within the novel.
Was this based on a true story?
Martha was a real character.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You should have listened to my overview.
I was listening.
Or if you read the author's note, Martha is real and a lot of the details are real. Her diary is real, which is why we know these things. But I actually think what you said, Snitch, you don't even realize what you said, was actually quite genius, which is that the diary is so dry and her day was so juicy. I think the juiciness is what this author has injected into the story. Mm. And it's a lot of editorializing, which is where I start to take issue with historical fiction. Because on the one hand, I like it. It makes historical characters and stories so digestible. But on the other hand, like, we're just making shit up.
Yeah, no, 1,000%.
Yeah, but I do think she had the facts that she loosely worked around and added some flair for our benefit as readers, Jack.
Yeah. No, I know. And overall, it's a good mission, because I wouldn't know Martha Ballard if I didn't read this book. But now, do I have an idea of Martha Ballard that's just, like, so
inaccurate?
Not who she was. Yeah.
Maybe the book was so long because she would describe the day and then we would have to read about the day in the journals. So it was, like, double the story.
And we'd have to read about her walking to her workroom to write about the day and why she wrote about this day, and then having her go back to the other day.
Yeah, going back to the
other
day.
And all the journals say, I was at home.
Yeah,
like,
I was at home, clear. Also, I didn't get to read the author's note because I had to stay up until 4 in the morning to finish this godforsaken book. So the second that I finished it, I did turn my Kindle off and go to sleep.
So I did the same. I was up till midnight. I did not read the author's note, though, until today.
No one told me it was important. Sometimes author's note is, like, not.
Yes, Snitch, how come you didn't read it today?
As a rule of thumb, author's note is important for historical fiction, Snitch.
Okay, thank you for that rule of thumb. And now,
Strange Sally Diamond.
Thank you for that note. I will now do that going forward and make it a priority. I appreciate the feedback.
Okay, next question. Much of the novel's action focuses on the legal process surrounding Rebecca Foster's assault and Martha's testimony. Were you surprised at the way the 18th century judicial process unfolded? Do you think Rebecca's story would have been received differently in a contemporary courtroom?
This is what was hard when I was reading the book, is that, like, I so badly wanted, like, justice be served. But, like, I knew better. Like, obviously that wasn't going to happen in the 1730s, 1760s. So it was, like, annoying, because it was, like, obviously the outcome was, like, relevant to the time. But I still didn't like it.
Yeah, but I also feel like it would be different now, because there would be forms of evidence just from living in this time, whether, you know, she had her doorbell footage or his cell phone pinged at this tower at proving that he was in her house. Like, there are ways that the case would have been different, but there was no, it's hard to say, like, there was no evidence outside of he said, she said.
Jackie, I thought the same thing. Like, when they were going through it, there was nothing.
The lace that they found on Joshua
Burgess. But that was at the end.
That was never presented to the court.
She didn't even give it.
What the court had was her testimony versus his, and also Mistress Ballard's to back her up.
But her backup only backed up the fact that she was raped.
Well, Martha made a good point when she was, when Cyrus was getting in trouble. She was like, I don't understand. When it came to Rebecca, there was no evidence to show that he was guilty, so you let him go. But when it comes to Cyrus, there's also no evidence to show he killed him, and yet you're holding him hostage. Like,
Yes, I just want to say it turned out that was false, and that warrant was falsified. So it's, like, not a fair comparison. But what was a fair comparison was the girl who was accused of libel, and it was all, like, she said this about her and that's not true, and it was all she said, and that girl was fined into debt. And this was a case with more egregious accusations, and that was not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was definitely hard because there was nothing besides what they each said.
Yeah. And I did feel like when it went to the first lower court and then that judge's decision was to take it to the second court, and like Martha was so upset that it wasn't going straight to the Supreme Court. Like, I felt like she was being a little unreasonable. And if Ryan like talked her down, he was like, listen, if it went straight to the Supreme Court, they'd be like, why didn't it go to the Second Circuit Court to begin with?
She was being a little 2000s, you know?
I was surprised that Rebecca kind of seemed to get some justice in that trial. People seemed to be more on her side than his there. Like, he fled.
And it seemed like that Judge Wood, was a fair, like, he was asking the right questions. He was suspicious of North. Like, he wasn't just like, boys club, North is a judge, I got my boy.
Yeah, he was like, this is ludicrous that you're overseeing this and you're the one who's accused. Like, get out of here.
Yeah. So, yes, of course, it was extremely frustrating and there was not justice. And in real life, there wasn't justice. And in real life, the rape was far worse than what was described in the book. Next, Martha and her daughter spend much of the novel immersed in everyday household labor, such as making candles, baking bread, weaving, and killing chickens. Were there any 1780s tasks you'd be interested in trying for yourself? So this question is for me, because essentially Martha and her daughters were homesteaders, and they were living the tradwife homestead life, and it was beautiful. Now, I don't know if I want to like make my own candles, but certainly the bread, like, just the vibes were good. Those were cozy vibes, man. Home and hearth.
You should make candles.
Should I make you one and send it to you?
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
I actually thought the candle making did look nice. It was definitely labor intensive, though.
Everything in this book was labor intensive. Like, I've never
everything at this time was labor intensive.
I've never met people who worked so hard in my life.
1000%. They were up early, bed late, working the whole time in between.
And then, oh, you know what really pissed me off? When Martha wouldn't go to sleep. Like, she'd be so tired. She had a crazy effing day, like, up for hours. Gets to sleep, gets to bed, can't fall asleep.
Does anyone else, when they read these sort of books, feel constantly cold? Like, I agree, Jax, there's such a cozy vibe to the candle-making, bread-doughing part. But when she's, like, wet and cold and crossing the river and can't get the draft out of the room, or she's surveying the dead body, like, it just makes me feel so chilly all the time.
You know what? I actually had the opposite experience where I felt like I wasn't absorbing, making enough of a big deal about the cold. And I actually had to, like, stop and place myself and be like, okay, this is Maine in the dead of winter. Like, even when we went to Colgate, like, think of that, the coldest day there. Like, it's colder than that. And then still, like, I kept thinking someone was going to fall into the river trying to cross it.
I mean, it's called the Frozen River. I'm like, when are we getting to the river climax?
By the way, same. I was like, what's the river? What's the problem with the river? I guess because they found the body in the river. And
the whole book takes place over the time when the river freezes to when the river thaws.
Also, Sam did fall through the river. They rescued him with the rope.
Well, here's my question. Let's get to the plot of the story, which is this murder. Spoiler alert, Sam and Jonathan killed Joshua, threw him in the river, and then he fell in the river and discovered the dead body he just killed. If he didn't want people to know about the death, he could have just been like, over here, you know, why did he intentionally fall into the river to find Joshua so that people would know he died?
By the way, I thought the same thing. I was like, what are the odds that the morning after you throw Joshua into the river, you fall in the river and then find Josh?
So I think it was intentional.
Why would he want to find him?
I thought like this guy had been murdered months or years ago and they were just finding him, not like 10 minutes ago. And I was confused about the rope and the fact that it was bloody was the key. Like, I agree, that whole sequence was bizarre once you realize the truth.
Yeah. So now it's up to the reader to like think about their intentions. Was the whole thing staged?
Into
the river?
I just don't know why they would want them to find the body.
So that maybe the town could know, like, this rapist is dead. Like, Rebecca would know and May would know.
But, like, he would disappear. I mean, I guess people would then live in fear that he'd come back. Like, if they thought he was missing.
Maybe, like, a warning sign to other rapists.
Like, yeah.
I don't know. I was left with that question. Next question. What did you think about the way that Martha and Ephraim's past is revealed in the interstitial chapters? What did those glimpses of their earlier years reveal about them as the 1789 story unfolded? Okay, I just thought this was, like, really unnecessary. It didn't really add much to the storyline.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And
with you.
the author said at the end that her, you know, having Martha be a victim of sexual assault was not necessarily the truth. She said, given the time period and the odds, like maybe it was true, but that's not a fact that's known about Martha. So
that's
really
weird to like make that up.
Yeah, that's also what weird for? To be like, oh, in this time period, it was likely that women were raped. So it probably could have happened.
Yeah. And it's like, that's really one of the main reasons why we kept going back. I just feel like a historical fiction author doesn't know how to write a book without having two different time periods. But I just want them to know it's okay.
You know, like, what I okay. thought of the whole
time. There was so much
time.
Going on.
The invisible
1780s were enough for us.
Yeah.
Taimu.
The invisible string, you guys, with all the redheads book, always comes back to your period. Whether it's Codename Helene or Addie LaRue or Martha, like, confirming that she was not with child after the past scenes, I just find myself always thinking about it when I'm reading these books. Like, it's so spotlighted.
Yeah. I think that just goes to us, you know, wanting to read about women and women's issues at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It's International Women's Month. Women's History Month.
Oh my gosh, counts. That's so beautiful.
It's Women's History Month.
How are you going to celebrate?
I just read
going
a book.
Going on your vacation?
I just read a book about the history of a woman.
What was it called? Counselor and Camper?
No, it was called Frozen River.
Oh, well, so here's the thing. I feel like I don't really go by the months because we all, like, have our months that we choose books and, like, we can't follow the calendar of special months because, like, they're just – that's not what we do. But in March, we always actually do read, like, a woman-centric book. But I think also we always just read woman-centric books.
What was last month, you little prodigy, recalling last our books? Last March, yeah.
Last March.
Oh, someone's on the spot. Let's see. Could she do it?
I don't know if I could do it. What do we? I had chosen Marjorie Poston after The Measure. Okay, not women's book.
The opposite. No.
But before, like, we had read Four Winds in March.
I hated that freaking book.
Yeah, that book was dreadful.
Dreadful.
Four Winds.
For Kristen Hannah. Four Winds. Like, not because there was anything wrong with the book. It's just like a dreadful, literal depression of a time.
Those are tough times.
There's no, like, making that fun, but you've got to learn about it.
Yeah, that's what
I do think. We also read women's books. Like, Marjorie Post wasn't Women's History Month.
I loved that book. Strange Sally Diamond.
No, that like wouldn't count. Next question. Martha's final confrontation with North has lasting consequences for both of them. Do you think justice was done? What about as regards Rebecca's assault and Burgess's killing?
I mean, that was insane. Yeah. She just fully chopped off his penis. Like,
I love that.
I would say there's some level of justice in that. I didn't love that he continued being a judge thereafter and survived necessarily, but, like, that's as good as you're going to get maybe.
No,
it's
good that he survived, because had he died, they would have blamed her and they would have sentenced her to jail, obviously. And, like, it wouldn't have been good for her. And here with this, he has so much shame. Like, he would never say, like, oh, Martha Ballard cut my dick off.
Yeah, it's like mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I wish there was more repercussions for him politically and financially, you know, because he was doing all that scheming to buy up all the land. And someone mentioned this earlier, but I do agree that hearing about the way that people got land at that time and the leases and then eventually, like, you would own the land was very interesting to me. And it really goes to show you how there was so much opportunity here and why people came here. But I'd never really read stories from this time period, so I never think about it.
It was also so scary, that scene when, like, she was crippled and bleeding out from falling and he was, like, pulling down his pants. Like, that was a lot.
Oh, yeah. I didn't enjoy that.
Yeah. Me neither. Okay, next question. Final question. Did you read the author's note? No, for Margot. If so, did it change your evaluation of Martha's life and the story of the Year of the Long Winter? Well, I feel like the author kind of buried the lead with this book, because in the author's note, she says in the first paragraph, like, this was a midwife who delivered over 1,000 babies and never lost a mother. And, like, that needed to be somewhere
in the book. Totally.
Like, the midwife of midwives.
Like, the queen of midwives. Also, you know what I thought was interesting was when she noted that there were, like, 5 other midwives in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting that you don't own the monopoly on this.
I was like, how big is the midwife collective? And also, like, how many people live in this town?
She said it spanned 2 miles. That's it.
As we said, they were having a lot of babies at the time. I think there were like 1,000 people in the town. I think she said 180 families at one point.
Maybe.
So what if 2 people are giving birth on the same day? Like, you got to have another.
Okay, yes. I can't imagine not calling Marth. Like, she was the homie of all homies when it came to midwives.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, thank you for answering those questions. And now we have redhead's questions. Not too many, but this redhead wants to know, I'm curious to know what you thought of the villain Joseph North. I almost found him so one-dimensional and comically evil, it was distracting at times. For example, at the end when he was trying to steal their lease and rape her. Did you all feel that he needed some sort of character arc or redemptive quality to give him more intrigue and nuance? Or was that the point that he lost his humanity early on and he was essentially soulless?
I don't think he needed a redemption arc. What I would have wanted a little bit more insight into was his relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
I feel like the one lame attempt at showing humanity was when the shop owner mentioned how he had lost his soul in the war. Like, that was indicative of he had been through some stuff, but it was not enough.
Yeah, not even indicative that he had been through some stuff, but, like, you see how this person, like, gets rewarded for doing, like, bad things and why they would continue to do bad things. I didn't think about it like this until this person posed this question. I guess it was a lot of villainous behavior all at once.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that was rooted in the true story.
Yeah, I actually like the way the question is framed. I think it brings up a good point. He was pretty just riding the evil character title hard.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into the moral of the story. Bex, what do you got?
You know what? I actually will pass this one to Dana.
Go ahead, Dana.
Mine's too specific to one very small subplot, but I thought that expertise is not directly correlated to formal education. Like, don't knock someone just because they didn't go to Harvard. You can learn a lot just through practice and trial and error.
That's good.
It's so weird.
I like that.
That was actually mine.
No, you guys, I think I've got it. I've got two of them.
Go.
I've got two morals. One, a woman's work is never done.
So true.
Two, well-behaved women seldom make history.
Hey.
I'm sorry. I messed it up. Well-behaved women seldom make herstory.
Those are good. I feel good about those. Let's leave those.
Let's leave them. Wait, hold on. I'm Googling more women in history quotes, especially as it is, as you said,
also, like,
Women's Month.
It's like women do it all, men do nothing.
Yeah. Okay, wait. There is no limit to what we as women can accomplish. Michelle Obama. That's beautiful.
Stunning.
Michelle, that's beautiful.
90 quotes for Women's History Month.
Oh, God.
Shall
one
I start?
1 through 90. Let's start at the top.
I am a woman. Phenomenally. Phenomenal woman. That's me.
Please stop.
That's Maya Angelou. That's beautiful. A lot of these are like, they're not, you know, they don't rhyme. So they're just not going to work for us. And I just think, like, honestly, reading some of these quotes, like, we as women have to do better.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
The biggest adventure you can ever take is to live the life of your dreams. It's giving word salad. That's Oprah.
Word salad.
Okay, so now it is time for our Hollywood treatment. Who would you cast? And I personally don't need to see this as a show.
Well, you guys, same. There is a movie called Frozen River, and I was looking at it being like, oh my God, is it the same? It's not.
Oh. Who would you cast as Martha?
Susan Sarandon.
No, you would not.
I sure would.
No, you wouldn't. Trash. Throw her in the trash can.
Oh, yeah.
She's canceled. I wouldn't give her a job. I wouldn't watch her in a movie.
Oh, my God. Really? She's canceled?
She's a literal terrorist sympathizer and stumper.
Stop.
We're not casting Susan Sarandon.
Oh, my God. I don't even know who she is.
Not before your big trip to Israel.
Sally Field.
Sally Field's a good one. Is she all right?
No, she's good.
She's good.
Susan Sarandon's
safe.
Just like
she's
the
Mark
worst.
Safe.
Oh my God.
Sally Field is Mark Safe to cast.
I did Margot Martindale.
Oh, Snitch. You love her.
I love her. She, you know who she is? She's Hannah Montana's grandma in Hannah Montana the movie.
Yep, she's also in Secretariat. She's really in everything.
She's literally, but she's such a queen, and she, like, loves to yell at men, you know? It's the best.
Yeah.
That is so right.
Yeah.
She's so cute. I was going to go Nicole Kidman.
No, because they said she's ugly.
Yeah, she has to be more homely.
She said she's ugly.
But, and like, then Ephraim literally agreed. He said, yeah, you're not pretty, but I love you.
He said, you're not pretty, you're beautiful. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's, you know what you say to someone when they're ugly? You're not pretty, you're beautiful.
I feel like people treated her like she was pretty.
I don't know. Because she commanded respect.
Yeah, she commanded the room.
Dana, do I want to know who you cast?
I had Laura Linney.
Perfect. Yes. No. Also good. But Laura Dern, also good.
Oh, totally. Dern.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I misspoke.
Yeah, slay.
Same.
Ephraim.
I had Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Who the hell is that?
Look him up. He was Denny in that one season of Grey's Anatomy that made such a splash.
Okay, sure.
Snitch.
I had Gary Oldman.
That's good, I think. Joe Manganiello.
I could see that.
Yeah.
George Clooney.
Okay. We got to do our Redheads rating of Frozen River. Bex, let's start with you.
4.4.
Dana?
3.6.
Snitch?
3.8.
Whoa.
Wow. I'm going 3.
Jackie, no, you're not.
Let me see. What did I give it on Goodreads? I can't believe you guys liked it so much.
It was a great book.
It was?
Yeah, it was.
What did I give it on Goodreads? Hold on. This is important.
Okay. I gave it a 3 on Goodreads.
Okay. I gave it a 4, so I'll give it a 3.5. That's fair. Divided by 4 is a 3.825.
Too low. Doesn't feel right.
What are you talking about?
No.
This couldn't possibly be biased.
That ties it with The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. Does that feel right to you, Snitch?
Yes.
I'm most shook about Snitch. I feel like I'm in Twilight Zone. Yes, yeah, Snitch, I'm sorry. You took the biggest dump on my country friends.
Oh, oh my shut God. Up. Don't even bring up my country friends, Dana.
This is not the time. To me, this book, like, reminded me of Hester. Like,
Hester was a great book.
No, it wasn't.
That, like, in hindsight, you know why it's just like, okay.
You know why it reminds you of Hester? Because that was a great book.
Because it was like, okay, thanks for this
I just
book.
Am authentically a historical fiction lover, and I guess you guys are masquerading as such.
Okay, I just want to say 3.825 like is pretty high, and that ties it with Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post for 21. Spot number 21 out of 51.
Okay.
That feels all right. I guess Hester got a 3.8 from us. So, you know what? We are pretty consistent.
That's funny.
Okay, now it is time for the other books we read this month. I did not read. Did anyone read?
I started this, like, incredibly smutty series, and it's called Chestnut Springs, and the first one was great. It's called Flawless, and if anyone is just in the need for a palate cleanser, I'd recommend.
Okay. Bex?
I reread Romantic Comedy by Curtis Sittenfeld. I don't know. I, like, just needed something familiar, so I reread it, and it's great as always.
Great. Dana?
I read The Shards by Bret Easton Ellis. I thought it was going to be my new favorite book, and by the end, I kind of couldn't stand it, so I gave it a 3.5. And then I read The Women by Kristen Hanna. That's her new book.
Oh, I want to read it. How is it?
I didn't really like it, but everybody else did. So it's probably a me thing. It's about the Vietnam War, which was interesting to learn about. I have to say I couldn't stand the writing. Like, I just didn't like this book. I gave it a 3.3.
Yeah, I know someone who read it who was obsessed.
Yeah, most people like it. I was just like, ugh.
Okay. Well, Dana, what are we reading next month?
You guys, next month, jumping on this train still of women's literature, we are reading By Baby by Carola Lovering.
I love Carola Lovering.
She wrote Tell Me Lies, that very popular show that everyone, including me, was obsessed with. It came out today, which is the date of recording, March 5th. So brand spanking new. That's why I didn't ask anyone if they've read it, because I knew the answer couldn't possibly be yes. And I hope it is fodder for a great conversation.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm really excited. We will see you guys in April. Wow, the year is just passing us by. The next time the episode drops, Snitch will be in her new apartment.
Yay.
So we will see you on the next one. Thank you to the Redheads hosts and the Redheads listeners for being a part of this wonderful community. We love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.